Welcome to Stories of Stories. I'm your host, Mike Chin. In each edition of this podcast, I explore the stories behind a specific creative project, process, or experience. I'll be talking about projects on this show with the expectation that either you're already familiar with the project I'm talking about, so for example, if it's a story, you've already read it, or you are prepared for some spoilers to occur. I will be talking about content of a given project or experience with the expectation that you won't mind if I tell you how things turn out or key plot points or whatnot. So this episode's topic is three words that became hard to say. This is the personal blog that I started in the fall of 2012. It's become a venue primarily for short personal essays where I reflect on pieces of my past. I've also done some sort of miscellaneous criticism there and odds and ends. I conceived of this project right around the time that I ended up launching it in the late summer, early fall of 2012. In the past, I had written in a live journal, and I'd experimented with blogging on Facebook a little bit, and these modes just kind of seemed to get a little bit outdated by this time, and the blogging technology itself had improved with the advent of things like Blogspot, which became Blogger, which is all under the Google banner by the time that I had started up with it. And I saw kind of the opportunity to continue kind of that legacy of doing some blogging, and wanted to continue with that. So I went into the project. Leading up to that, I'd been working a lot with the acapella blog, and I would be starting again with 4-on-1 Mania for my wrestling column. And I'd become very concerned with traffic numbers and kind of tracking how many people were reading my material or at least visiting the site. And around this time, I was getting a little bit kind of frustrated with that and decided I didn't want that to be the lone driving factor of what I posted and whether I considered something that I wrote successful or not. So I decided that for this project, I was just going to kind of disregard audience. I was going to make it available to my friends and family. I was going to post it on Facebook. But whatever happened with it, happened with it. It was going to be more a place for me to kind of put my ideas and kind of have a space on the internet. And I would still maintain my other projects, but this one would be more about my own satisfaction with the project. And if that's as far as it went, then that would be fine. So I came up with the idea for the blog, and I was thinking about different ways of theming it, different things to call it. And I settled on this title, Three Words That Became Hard to Say. And as some of my friends know, that's a reference to a song by the Avett Brothers called I and Love and You. And throughout the song, he refers to these three words that became hard to say, three words that, that aren't really in his vocabulary anymore, or he's been beaten down enough that he doesn't really think about anymore, with the climax of the song being that those words are the title of the song, I and Love and You. So how hard it can be to say I love you after a certain point, which has always just been a lyric that really resonated with me. I say always as if it's some classic song. It's a song that was probably released maybe 10 years ago, maybe a little less than that. But in any event, it's a song that I really enjoyed quite a bit, and it's a song that I decided to theme the blog around a little bit. And what followed from that is I wrote my first post and called it Live Your Life, and I'll talk more about that post in a second. But after I wrote that post, I got to thinking, that title is only three words long, and I've got this whole three words that became hard to say as sort of the theme of the blog, is title of the blog. And it led me to the recurring concept of naming all of the blog posts with just three words. And that's something that I've stuck to now, since the blog has continued. And I think it's kind of a cool little hook in a few ways. One, it provides some consistency to all of the posts. That's going to be one of the elements that recurs. It's also a nice challenge for me as a writer to think about things in this format and to always come back to titling things in three words. One of the issues I was grappling with at that time, and I feel like I'll probably be grappling with for most of my life, is tending to overwrite things. You use more words than I need to express an idea. So this three words format is kind of one step in the direction of, all of these titles are only going to be three words long, and the posts themselves might get a little bit verbose, but the titles at least will be contained within this space. And that's Something that, you know, I think has been helpful for me to again think about how to kind of make these ideas more concise, and you know, it's carried over into, you know, me using Twitter more aggressively and the space constraints that comes with, and writing more flash fiction, and even writing these posts for the blog where I don't have any limitations necessarily imposed regarding length, but I do like to think about making them digestible in a single reading. You know, there are a handful of longer ones, but most clock in somewhere under 2,000 words, which I think is, again, a pretty easy amount to digest in a single sitting, just kind of casually, you know, scrolling through. So going back to that, the first post for the blog, I called it Live Your Life. I recounted this experience I had where I kind of made an ass out of myself with an ex-girlfriend who, at the time when this all happened, I wasn't entirely over. And, you know, I talked to my best friend afterwards and was, you know, talking about, man, I really blew it, you know. You know, this already wasn't a great situation, and I've gone and made it, you know, more awkward, more problematic, you know, and was kind of asking advice, you know, what do you think I should do? How can I, you know, smooth things over? And he says been really smart to me about, you know, it's not about grand gestures and kind of making, you know, big apologies. I mean, it's fine to say you're sorry, and I think it's important that people make apologies, but what's more important is the way you live your life. The way you conduct yourself day in and day out, you know, and showing people that that's not you, that that's, you know, you did something wrong, and that's, you know, not something you can erase, but that's, you know, an aberration for you. That's the exception and not the rule. And that always stuck with me. That's why I wrote that first post about. It's a really short one. So it was about, you know, kind of that specific experience and that life lesson, but it was also about what the blog was going to be. In that I, at that point, I wasn't sure what I was going to be writing. I knew some of it was going to be this kind of reflecting on experiences. But, you know, I knew I also wanted to, you know, weave in, you know, some writing about current events and some, you know, personal kind of, interests of mine. And so, you know, I had to, think about what this blog was still going to be, but I didn't want to put off starting the blog anymore. So I didn't have a great explanation, you know, in terms of definitively saying this is what this blog is going to be. And, you know, in retrospect, I think at the time I thought that it was important that I do have some better sense of that, which was kind of silly, because when I look at, you know, most, you know, websites out there that have any longevity, any popularity, usually they have transformed at least to some degree over time. You know, they'll have central, you know, topics they come back to, central tenets and philosophies. But the kind of content they're putting on, the people who are writing for it even, often vary significantly over time. So the idea with this post was saying, you know, you've got to stick with this site. If you're interested in what I'm going to do, keep reading, because it's going to be shaped as it goes. And I can't tell you what it's going to be. You just have to watch me live my life, run this site, write what I'm going to write, and you know, we'll both see what comes out of it. So after, you know, just a little while of working on this site, I got contacted by a good friend of mine from high school, Derek, who lost his father when we were both kids. His father was hit by a drunk driver, you know, and it's a really profound tragedy. And Derek was asking me, you know, I see you've got this new blog going. Would you mind writing something about, you know, like drunk driving and kind of why it's such a messed up thing to do and the way it, you know, it's so selfish and can really affect people. And I was a little reticent to do it. I mean, A, just because sort of felt as though I was kind of appropriating his experience if I were going to write something about that. I didn't want for the blog necessarily to be a place for me to, you know, stand on a soapbox or, you know, deliver political messages, you know, if not even for myself, but for someone else, you know, even though I clearly agree with that message. But ultimately, I did do it as a favor to him. I wrote something where I recalled, you know, my own experience of hearing the news and, you know, how that affected the family and, you know, what people ought to think about now, you know, especially approaching the holidays as it was, which was, you know, around the anniversary of his, you know, father passing. And the post ended up being really successful, specifically in the early days of doing the blog. That you know, had a huge spike in web traffic. I mean, yeah, you know, I kind of said that I wasn't going to pay attention much to the numbers, but inevitably I get drawn into it a little bit. You know, I didn't want that to be the definitive factor. That's never been what the site's necessarily about, but it did show me that you know, people were going to read. And particularly, I think people who were close to Derek really tuned in on that one, and showed me some of the potential of what I could do with this site. So I kept writing. And one of the things I kept getting drawn into in the first, you know, year and a half to 2 years of working on the blog, was writing about these ex-girlfriends and, you know, various rendezvous I'd had. And it was interesting. I mean, on one hand, I thought it was something that, you know, yielded interesting stories. There's stories that stood out to me, and there's stories I think spark curiosity, and I think people are interested in reading. At the same time, they were problematic. Because there was that element of airing dirty laundry. I actually went to great pains to try to paint most things in a more positive light, even necessarily than I remembered them. But, you know, having to spin things a little bit and having to kind of choose, you know, moments carefully to, on one hand, you know, not villainize anyone, on the other hand, not kind of romanticize the moment too much and make it sound as though, you know, I were still into some situation that was left far behind. There's also a fair amount of work that went into just kind of trying to make these situations more anonymous, because I didn't want to make anyone uncomfortable or, again, make it feel like I was, you know, not so much even airing dirty laundry as just exposing people's personal lives. You know, there's a piece of, you know, when two people are together and then two people break up, you know, who kind of owns these stories? You know, and in casual conversation, things will come up. In the writing life, I think it's, you know, probably something a lot of writers have faced. I know some of my friends have talked about it with me where, you know, they're, if not whole stories, at least details of these relationships that, you know, live on in the things that we write and the way that we see the world. So it was something that I did a fair bit, you know, early on in the blog's run. But then, you know, as things carried on, I was both running out of stories because I've only dated so many people, at least in situations where there were stories that were at all worth telling. And then I was also newly involved in what quickly became a committed relationship. So I kind of switched the lens on the site a little bit at that point, you know, and didn't rule out necessarily writing about past relationships, but it was definitely, you know, it went from being kind of probably the most explored topic or one of the top two or three most explored topics to something that pretty rarely surfaces on the blog. But I was starting to think a lot about what else I could write about and having all these memories. And there's this great quote by the writer Flannery O'Connor where, loosely speaking, she says, you know, anyone who survives childhood has enough experience to write for a lifetime. You know, and I thought about that. And, you know, I think it's so true. It just kind of, you know, in the process of growing up, you experience so many things for the first time, so many, you know, ideas and people and, you know, your first trip to the dentist, to your first time, you know, celebrating Christmas when your whole family's not there, to your learning musical instruments. You know, there are just so many, you know, odds and ends, you know, and it really broadened my lens in terms of what I might write about, you know. And you know, I'm getting a little ahead of myself here, but, you know, by the time this podcast goes live, I'll been doing this blog for, you know, I don't know, I think it's about 4 years by that point, maybe a little longer, a little shorter. And I'm still writing about all of this. I still, you know, when I just kind of start to brainstorm a little bit, there's still so many things I haven't even touched upon yet that come to me. So it's true that there's just kind of so much information we all can still tell stories about, and as writers that, you know, people can still write about. So a lot of these posts have kind of circled back to my family, which, you know, makes sense when you think about, you know, childhood through, you know, young adulthood. I've written about my father a fair bit, and, you know, some of my favorite posts have been about my father. You know, I wrote a post about the process of him teaching me to read called Learning to Read, the process of him trying to teach me baseball called Taking a Swing. You know, and I always have mixed feelings about writing and posting these things, because they often particularly paint him in a not great light. You know, he was sort of a figure in my childhood who, you know, caused me some pain at that time. He was, you know, pretty harsh on us, you know, yelled at us a lot, wasn't, you know, abusive per se, but, you know, definitely, I had a hard time kind of interacting with him, you know, from an early age. And he was often, I think, you know, subconsciously, you know, then and even now, you know, a person who I always wanted to make proud, because I always got the sense that he wasn't so proud. And, you know, these are, stories. Yeah, I've written, you know, a good handful of them now, but those ones in particular stand out to me, the learning to read one, where, you know, what I come to, and part of why I think this writing is important, is coming to this space of recognizing that, you know, I think he was doing the best that he knew how. Things didn't always work out so well or the way that he had really intended them to, but I think he always meant well with it. I think he was looking at the big picture and thinking about, you know, what would be good for us. And, you know, there were some things that were, some things that weren't. But when I look objectively at the fact that I'm a writer now, it's really hard to extract that from the fact that, you know, he really pushed me to read a lot as a kid and start reading a year before they were going to teach me in school, which, you know, got me to writing my own stories and starting that process right when other kids were learning how to read for the first time. So, I do owe a debt of gratitude for that. And I like to think most of these posts end up in a space of, you know, on one hand, you know, expressing kind of the pain that I had at the time, but on another hand, also kind of celebrating what he was trying to do for us, and that we have what I take to be a healthier relationship, you know, at this point, you know, as adults. So you know, I've written about, you know, my relationship with my father a number of times. I'd say I've also written quite a bit about my grandmother, and that's sort of you know, a totally different side of the coin on that one. Growing up, my grandma Jean, who, you know, lived in the same town as us, about 5-minute drive from our house, was one of the closest people to me, and someone who was just so kind and so selfless, and kind of, you know, all of the upside of things, you know, that people say about their grandparents, and really none of the negative. Just kind of this person who I remember being, you know, someone who I completely, you know, trusted and loved without question when I was a kid. And I tried to distill a lot of what that relationship was about. There's a post that's going to be, I think, coming up in a little bit. I don't think it'll be live by the time that this podcast goes up, about her house, where I kind of go room by room in her house and remember kind of the pieces of what I experienced there and how that kind of shapes her as a person, or at least my recollection of her. She also shows up a lot in my posts around Christmas time, because that's a time when I think about her a lot, because I remember that being, you know, one of the highlights of my relationship with her. But I've written about, you know, the rest of my family as well. I've written, you know, about my sister and you know, her wedding, and about you know, one of her high school boyfriends left an impact on me and how that affected, you know, my relationship with my sister. I've written about my mother to some extent. I've written about my, you know, kind of secondary family as well, which, you know, I think of as, you know, my family down the street with my best friend. His mother and father and sister and grandmother were all really close to me as well growing up. And in some ways, you know, especially in my teenage years and, you know, immediately out of high school and then out of college, in some ways, like, I was actually closer to them than to my own biological family. So, you know, writing about all these people, you know, and as that alludes to, you know, I've written a good bit about, you know, my experience in high school, my experience in college, and all of these things, you know, the writing life, that I've kind of experienced at different stages throughout that. It's more philosophical concepts like, you know, about staying in touch with people and how relationships change, you know, over time and distance, how we say goodbye to people, all of these things. So another recurrent piece, every year I post a post about my end of the year soundtrack for the year. And this is something that actually predates the blog. But it's a project I started kind of right when I first went to college, around that time, of every year at that point making a mixed CD. Now it's just a playlist, but kind of summarizing my year and kind of associating different songs with different experiences I had, whether it was just a pop song that was on the radio at that time and I was hearing all the time, you know, whether it's a song that I associated, you know, with a girl that I liked, or a song that I associated with, you know, some other kind of experience I had. You know, sometimes, you know, you work in an office setting, there's kind of that music that plays in the background that you listen to, you know, over and over again, whether you like it or not. And that was one of the central tenets of the soundtrack from the beginning, and it continues to be now that I've been doing it for, you know, over a decade, is that, you know, it's going to be some music that I like, and that's part of why I've listened to it and why I associate with moments. But also it might be some music I don't necessarily like, but still that is, you know, linked to these specific places and times and experiences throughout a given year. So the blog has also become the hosting place for that. I had previously posted those on my live journal back when that was a thing, and I'd used Facebook notes for a year or two in between. And now they're a pretty central, you know, thing that I do every December and post on this blog. So when I think about the work in this blog, a lot of times I think of it as beginnings, you know, and reflections on, you know, my experiences, but not necessarily fully formed pieces or fully formed essays. Because I think essay is probably the best term to kind of try to summarize what I'm working on in this project, in this blog. But, you know, these aren't things that I toil over and research much, you know, and write and rewrite. These are more things that, you know, I write, you know, more or less in a single sitting, or at least in a single day or two. And then, I'll go back and proofread once or twice, before putting them live. But that's about the extent of it. So, oftentimes I think of them as kind of fledgling pieces of my writing. Some of which I've gone on to, incorporate more fully, both in my fiction and, in some, you know, nonfiction projects I have on the back burner at this point. But it's kind of a good place to kind of start to explore these ideas, and it's something that I've also kind of gotten pretty compulsive about, staying ahead on. I like the idea of, with blogs, having some regularity to it. I think one of the more frustrating things is when you find a blog you really, really like, and then all of a sudden, you know, they go from posting, you know, multiple times a week to posting, once a month. And then it, you know, kind of just kind of dwindles down from there to where they're, you know, posting, you know, once a year or not even once a year, and it just kind of disappears gradually over time. That's always something that really disappointed me in blogs. So that's been part of my impulse that pretty early on I established I was going to write and post something every other week. Typically on Sundays I do the posting. And part of the idea with that is that, you know, every other week is a schedule that I think, at least at this point in my life and my life, you know, up to now, would be a pretty reasonable schedule to keep up with, to write something of this nature, once every other week. And that, you know, kind of allows some consistency there. People, you know, who are following it know when it's going to come up. They know there's some regularity. Sometimes I post a little bit more often than that. But it, you know, allows me to kind of have, that pattern and that continuity of the project. And it also facilitates me banking content. Because after a while I did start writing ahead, until I was, you know, a few months ahead. So I knew, there were times where I worked really busy summer jobs, for example, and wasn't going to have the same amount of time to write. So this allowed me to say, you know, okay, so, during the summer I can afford to, you know, not write for this project for, you know, a month or 2 months. And still be okay. So it's gotten to the point where we're at this point now for most of the blog's life. I've written material out 1 to 2 years ahead of time. One thing I like to think about is even if I were to, you know, have the unfortunate circumstance of passing unexpectedly, I could still live on in the blog in some sense. That's kind of a morbid way of looking at it. But this idea that there is still content available there. And so, you know, if I have it set to post, that can still go live and I can still have that way of communicating with the world, even in that instance. So anyway, I look at the blog as kind of, you know, my home on the internet, a base for people who I know or people who want to know me more. If my writing career, you know, does ever take off to a greater extent, it's a place where I can go to track my, you know, thought processes and experiences, and where, you know, my hypothetical fans would be able to do that. So I like the idea of just having kind of that space where, you know, it's not my most polished work, it's not my most intentional work, you know, towards any agenda. It's just me kind of telling stories and writing about things that I want to write about. Okay, so that pretty much, you know, wraps up the conversation of the blog there. So I'm going to move ahead to Mike's monthly endorsement. And just as a refresher, as an artist, I think it's important to be consuming other things to see, you know, what interests and inspires me and to see what's already out there and see what's come before me. So at the end of episodes, I'm recommending a book, story, movie, TV show, band, wrestling match, old basketball game, old board game, basically, you know, anything that may have escaped kind of mainstream attention or might be a little bit dated now, so it's on the cusp of being forgotten, but that in any event, I recommend to you. So this month's pick is Randy Pausch's Last Lecture. This is a YouTube video that lasts about an hour and 15 minutes, given by a professor at Carnegie Mellon. It's framed as being his last lecture. So it's a series that ironically had been renamed shortly before he delivered this lecture. But the concept that he goes into it with is, if you were going to give one final lecture, not necessarily directly in your discipline, not necessarily to any specific class, but just kind of, the greatest hits or the thing that you would most want to talk about, this is the opportunity to do that. So my friend Devin back in Baltimore introduced me to this back in, I think it was 2008, and I just loved it. So it's Randy Pausch talking about his life and, lessons learned and the childhood dreams that he had, ranging from obsessions with football to Star Trek, moving on to his career as an academic and his family life. And it really does, kind of run the gamut in content there. One of my favorite pieces of it is he has this kind of signature phrase that he mentions early on, and he circles back to more than once over the course of the talk. And it's this concept of brick walls. And he talks about how people run into brick walls all the time. And the idea is that brick walls aren't there to stop us from getting the things that we want. Brick walls are there to let us prove that we really want it. Because people who just want to be famous or just want money, when things get tough, tend to try something else, tend to find an easier way to get what they're trying to get to. But the people who are more kind of dedicated or more kind of focused on something, they'll see that brick wall as the opportunity. Like, okay, here's a challenge. But you know what, I do want it badly enough that I'm going to, be smart enough to figure out a way through this or work hard enough to work my way through this or over this. And I just really like that frame of thinking. And I think one of the risks that it runs into, with that kind of, tagline and with the overall concept of the last lecture, I think, when I've told people about this speech, it's tempting for them to kind of dismiss it as being just a motivational speaker talking in cliches and whatnot. And there are pieces of it that I can understand people reading that way, but I really don't think that's what's happening here. I think it's a little bit more intellectually rich than that, and has a little bit more heart than that, perhaps more importantly. And some of why I think that when people actually do give it a chance, it does work for a pretty wide audience is, Randy Pausch, he was a doctor. He was a professor of computer science. This guy, isn't someone with kind of a fuzzy academic background, and questionable credentials. He was a well-received professor who worked at one of the most prestigious universities in the country. And he's super earnest about the way that he talks about things. He actually says that at one point in his lecture there, where he says that he'll take an earnest person over a hip person any day, because earnest is long term. Hip, might be appealing in the moment, but it doesn't necessarily really mean anything in the long term. It's not about loyalty. It's not about honesty. It's about kind of just appearance. So I think that's part of what's working kind of fundamentally about this talk too, is just the level of earnestness in how Randy Pausch delivers it. And I won't talk too much more about the context. I don't want to spoil anything for anyone who does look for it. But if you do want to find it, you can just go to YouTube or to Google. You can route through that and just type in Randy Pausch last lecture. There are a handful of kind of accessory videos as well, of interviews that he did afterwards and kind of follow-ups. But it should be pretty easy to find this one. I think it's probably the first result you'll come up with. It's Pausch, P-A-U-S-C-H. And I really recommend it. It's something that I've gotten in the habit of listening to. Back when I first heard it, I listened to it a lot. I would say, I listened to it, four or five times, and then continued to listen to it, in years to follow. But then it's become kind of a thing for me that at least once a year I try to listen to it now, just because I find that a lot of times it's a good reminder to me of kind of some of the things that I value, similar to Randy Pausch. I think he puts really eloquently in ways that I haven't necessarily fully figured out how to communicate for myself at this point. I think it's just a really good message and kind of a good thing to hear and get a refresher on every now and again. Okay, so that's a wrap for this month's episode. I want to thank you for listening, and I hope you will check back again. Special thanks go to Mike Peake for providing the theme music for this show. I'm wishing you all good health, happiness, and creativity, and I'll catch you next time.